time to cast off on a new adventure. This is Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Hello and welcome to Real Adventures from wherever you're listening right around the country. Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood joining you this morning to talk all things fishing, boating and the great outdoors. And before we get into it, I'm going to apologise to everyone this morning because I have never experienced Aaron in a worse mood, even after dropping huge fish, going out in the boat for hours, not catching anything. This is the worst mood I've ever seen him in. Good morning, Redmond.
Well, there's two reasons why. It's because I've got a sore shoulder that's bad and I'm dealing with you. So that's the two reasons that I'm a little bit grumpy today, but that's all right. We're here to talk about fishing and the great outdoors. And Patrick, and we don't want to talk about it too much, but pretty much the whole country is experiencing a very harsh lockdown. So you and I got a bit of work to do to put a bit of work together.
Well, we have a bit of work to do to inspire everyone that there's some wonderful things happening right around the country at the moment, besides just the lockdown that everyone keeps talking about. So I said to you pre-meeting for this show, I didn't want you to talk about it. You've led with we're in lockdown. Can we just take ourselves away from it for 5 minutes, Aaron?
Well, we've got 40-odd minutes for the show, Pat, so let's not mention it again other than one or two more times.
Hey, Redman, there's some exciting news around the country. Now, Haines Hunter, one of the most iconic fiberglass boating manufacturers in the country, has released their new 760 enclosed. Now, this model is based on their very popular 760R, which is their soft top model. Now, this is the full hard top setup. You know, Davey Marine have taken the first order, and a lot of this has come off the back of customer feedback in its design. They're running twin 250s, beautiful white Yamahas on the back of it. It is an enormous boat, and Davey Marine have said this stems from customer feedback that trailer boats are going further and further offshore, are driving around the country, COVID permitting, and we need to have a vessel that we can take anywhere. Now, I know you've seen a few photos of it. It looks very similar to the 760R, the soft top version. I know you've spent a bit of time with Lee Rayner, who's got a wonderful 670. What do you make of it? This is going to be, you know, very much it's going to start in the 200s, I dare say, and then push up from there, depending on the electronics package, the outboard package. Most of these, you know, maxi trailable game boats now, Redmond, they're offering, you know, joystick control, which sometimes, you know, you're looking at 20 to 30 grand extra just for your steering package. Good move, bold move. Where do you see it?
I think it's a great move. I think it's a good-looking boat. I wouldn't even consider the soft top, to tell you the honest truth. That now goes out of the market for me, as you know how much I love the hard tops. But it's on that borderline of being – it's a big boat. 760 is that big boat, and that's going to – similar to yours, Pat, your North Bank, your 750, it's on that verge of, like, how do I trailer this? It's going to, like, where can – what vehicle do I need to pull this around the country? So it's going to be interesting. The weight, I haven't seen the overall weight of it yet. You might have, but it's going to be heavy.
I think we can assume that this is going to start in the mid-threes. At the moment, the base package at Davey Marine is 256. Now, as tested, this boat is, I think it's about 330 and sits just under 4 ton on trailer. Now, you can buy an ex-Riviera sort of 35 that's maybe 15 years old for a similar price. It's a huge amount of money. It's well over $250,000 for a trailer boat. But people continue to purchase them, and that's the whole reason that Davey Marine have really challenged Haines Hunter to add this to their range. Interest rates are interesting at the moment.
Yeah, they are. And Davey Marine, Adam Davey over there, he's got a magnificent business, fantastic workshop, great. He's right on the ball there with his clientele. He listens to what they have to say, and he does a really, really, really good job. So well done to the Haines Hunter crew for actually listening to – I think that's the biggest thing in getting a good boat. It's actually not just making a boat. It's listening to what people like myself and yourself, Pat, have to say and putting it all together and actually making the ultimate package. And It's probably on the bit for me. It's that bit big, too bit big for me. That 760. I do a lot of towing, so in all honesty, for me, it's that bit big. But for someone like you, Pat, who has to have everything big, it's probably the ultimate boat, like your 750 hardtop. So it's it's definitely going to select market. But I'm tipping that they're definitely going to sell. They're going to sell a few of them. And like I said, Davey Marine does a fantastic job. So if you are wanting to drop in there, I'm sure COVID permitting, that he'll arrange for you guys to be able to either go for a test run or whatever he's doing down there. He'll make it happen.
Redmond, one of the things, if you're going to purchase a boat this big, and we've spoken about it at length on the show before, is that you have to have a vehicle that's matched to be able to tow it. Now, besides purchasing a truck, within the market at the moment, Ram's obviously released their new 1500. The only problem is with that, Redmond, you're looking at 17 litres per 100 Ks, where the market seems to be going towards more fuel-efficient vehicles. This thing, powered by a wonderful Hemi engine, 17.5 litres per 100 Ks isn't exactly fuel-efficient, Redmond.
Yeah, well, we might just cut this segment because I want a Ram and I don't want cars to this day, so get this edited out. I do want a Ram. That's my ultimate car, is the Ram, and I've got to buy a new house, and the missus says she doesn't care what I do for that. So we'll cut that little bit out with the 17 litres an hour, because they're a beast of a car. I love them. I don't think they're practical in any way other than towing. You can't park them, you can't do nothing with them. But I don't think there's a much better car, as in for the old impressing people down the street sort of thing. And you can't park them anywhere, you can't do nothing. But like you said before, if you own a 760 hardtop Haynes Hunter, you're going to need it. Unfortunately, I'm going to need it just because I'm going to need it. But it's one of those, like the trailer boats these days. Look at what we're doing, like. Traveling to Polo Bay, 88 kilometres offshore, and I'm doing it in a 6-metre boat. And that hardtop we just spoke about is going to be 50 times comfier than that. It just is. It's a bigger boat. It's just how it works. Yeah. And you got Eden in New South Wales, and you and I headed to Cairns, and we did that whole coast up there in a 750 hardtop. And a lot of people, I know we trucked them up there, but a lot of people will be travelling up there. But with a Ram using 17 litres per 100, it's
horses for courses compared to, you know, anything else that's on the market. It is going to be similar if, say, you're purchasing a truck. Now, I know Ram claims sort of that 12.5 average, but once you start to tow things, every review that I've read, and I've read a few on Boat Sales, a cracking article that they did, and they were around that 17.5 litre. Now, you're looking at 120-odd, but in terms of 1,000 – but Redmond, it's the only thing that'll tow 4.5 tons. And if you buy a Land Cruiser, you've got to get a tow pack. You've got to spend more and get it upgraded. And if you're buying a Land Cruiser now, you can't get anything less. I think they're $250,000 now for a Toyota Land Cruiser. They're the world's most expensive secondhand car. Same with Ranger, Hilux. You're looking at the 3.5 ton towing. And what that doesn't, and what people sometimes forget, is that if you purchase that, Redmond, that 3.5, as soon as you step foot in it, your 70 kilos comes off it. So you're now 3.4. I step in it, there's 150 kilos comes off it. And then all of a sudden, it eats into how much you're actually able to tow with these vehicles. So we just don't have a massive market compared to the US, where it's really competitive with, obviously, the Ford 150s and Raptors and those sorts of things. We don't have that competition just yet, which is what will eventually drive prices down. That's, I dare say, enough for fishing and outdoor news, though, Redmond. Let's have a little bit of a look around the country. There's been some really good, there's been some good captures, but it just hasn't been quite everywhere because we haven't been able to get off and fish.
Well, usually I have a pretty in-depth report on my week in fishing, and the amount of rain we've had, I reckon if I cast it out of my boat in the driveway, I'd probably catch something because we've had so much rain and so much weather. But unfortunately, I haven't been out as much as I would have liked. I got out on the Thursday into my restrictions, a couple of hours, and I was only the ramp's 3-odd Ks from me. Then coming back towards my house, I can get nearly 4K offshore. So I was managed to get a couple of nice gummies, which is really good. I actually got a few whiting on the way back in as well, in close in the ocean there. Around the country, we've got owes Yellowfin, and I've got a guy that I follow on social media on Instagram. His name's Jake Brisbane, and I'm actually going to get him on in a few weeks to take us through this Yellowfin tuna bite specifically, because he is out there. Like I said to you last week, I don't think he works. He works on a commercial boat, but he catches more yellowfin on that boat and everywhere he goes. So I'm going to try and get him on in the next few weeks just to hear a fisherman sort of story. He works on a commercial boat. He's out there chasing these fish. It'll be a great chat with him. And he's going to go into depth of why he thinks, or hopefully I'm going to ask him to, why he thinks these yellowfin are hanging around for so long between that 40 to 80 kilo, and they're getting them on top water lure, and they just keep biting. So I'm going to really try and get him on to cover that for everyone in the country, but more specifically the New South Wales guys who can actually get an understanding of it.
If we head over to the West Redmond, Broome at the moment, probably one of the few places where you can just go about your daily lives, the West. But Broome, there's some great videos doing the rounds on socials at the moment of fantastic whale activity, but some huge Spanish mackerel. I know chatting with Carl Landon last week, he was up there and catching fish that were well over 1.5 meters long. We were talking about it. One of the great fish to catch, to capture, but also a great eating fish.
Yeah, I know you love eating them. We got a few when we were up north, and you made me clean all these fish for you to eat because how much you love the Spanish mackerel. But they're a great fish to catch. They're energetic, they're fun, they jump, you take the lures off and they do even all sorts of things. I know Al McGlashan fishing with a good friend of the show, Bomber Farrell, out of Groote Island, a couple of years maybe now, not even, and they literally took the lures off, the hooks off the lures, and they're literally having Spanish mackerel jump 10 metres out of the bloody water at times, like literally launching themselves out of the water, and just phenomenal fish to catch. You do need to run wire because they do have that super sharp teeth, so you've got to be pretty smart about how you crimp your wire, and there's certain knots you can do, the wire twist knot if you want to run them on deep divers. So they're one fish that I've only ever caught a handful of them, and I do want to land a big one. So it's definitely on my to-do list. And I know you pulled me away from New South Wales. I'm just going to throw just one more thing in there. The Mako shark fishery out of the New South Wales coast, the whole continental shelf, that 120-meter mark, give or take, is that rough area where we want to start looking for those makos. So that's just on the inside of the continental shelf. That is the area where we tend to target our striped marlin, that 120 to 180. Now, when you're targeting makos, this is the time of the year they get those real big ones and big numbers. When you target them, you need to be smart. You can't just rock up anywhere and hope to God that you're just going to catch a mako. Now, the numbers do get to the stage where you could nearly do that, but if you want to get consistency and not waste your money and time getting out that far and putting all this burley in the water, set your drift up properly. We want to make sure that we're covering depths. We don't want to be drifting along that same contour line. We don't want to hit that 120 and just drift with it. So sometimes you cannot help it physically because the current's pushing that way, but quite often we have a little bit of breeze where we can turn the steering wheel to the side, get our angle of the boat, we want to drift side on, and that will naturally create a depth change. So you might, but another way to do it, if you are drifting the same way, is pick a part of the continental shelf that actually kinks or moves. That way you might go from 120 to 130 to 140, then back to 120. At least you're covering depths. The makos travel parallel to the shore. They always follow along the continental shelf. They follow their depths, and you want to have your burley. So a mako hits that burley trail, intercepts it, and makes their way to your boat. Now, the fish are big. I don't know what you're going to do if you get a 250-kilo one, which is well in, like, I'm not making that up. And bigger, 300-plus at times. So if you do want to try and catch one of them and kill one of them, you want to use a flying gaff. That's really, really important. And even for the smaller ones, using a flying gaff can literally save your boat and the scratches down the side, because they go off their head, those makos.
Talk to me about when it comes to the size of these sharks and being mindful of the bigger you go, the greater the mercury concentration and what that does to the edibility of these fish. It destroys them, essentially.
It does, and the way to reduce the mercury is by actually freezing the mercury in itself. So that's the bet. If you do get a big shark.
So you fillet the shark?
So let's just an example. So we'll go back just to a standard gummy shark. Naturally, over the years, coming back from when I was a kid with my old man, we used to always freeze gummy shark all the time because the mercury tastes bad and it's bad for you. Well, I've never noticed the mercury taste or being bad for you in the smaller gummy sharks. I've spoke to people, numerous people about it. They don't carry that sort of mercury content. A small mako probably doesn't either. But when you start to get to that 60 kilo, 80 kilo, even bigger, that's when the mercury starts to actually, there's more mercury in the fish and it builds up and gets more and more. So when you do get a big fish, for instance, say you kill and you kill the 150 kilo, you bleed it on the day, you gut it, you do all the right things, you get in, make sure that you do fill it up and freeze it. I wouldn't be, not a big fish, I wouldn't be eating it fresh. I'd be freezing it to make sure you actually reduce the mercury in that fish, because mercury is not very, very good for us at all to eat. So be mindful of that. You might turn out to look like Superman or something.
Redmond, heading South Australia at the moment. There's been some really good reports, albeit spasmodically at times, of tuna. There's been some really nice Australian salmon caught along the beaches. We heard head towards the port. Once again, in those shallow waters, there's reports of squid captures, but spasmodic at times. What are you hearing?
Yeah, the guys in the kayaks are probably having the best success. They're getting in nice and shallow, and they're fishing sort of around that York Peninsula. That York Peninsula is fishing very, very well. Once again, don't get carried away with the colour of your squid jig. You know me, it's my most hated question in fishing is what colour squid jig you use. Can't stand that question. It's about the fall of the squid jig. It's about, so if you're fishing in 2 meters of water in a kayak, you got to make sure the jig's not hitting the ground fast. You want to make sure it's having a nice sink rate through the water column and falling, so that squid has its best chance of grabbing it as it, you want it falling longer. You want it falling nicely longer through that water column than you do racing to the bottom or not sinking at all. And if you follow Real Action Fishing Charters also, Pat, out of Marion Bay, they're having a phenomenal season on the offshore fishery. Like, they're landing some seriously good fish. Blue Morwong, they're an amazing fish to catch and eat. Like, you reckon snapper pull hard? Well, in my belief, they pull harder and they taste better. They're a cleaner fish. Fantastic fish to target. You've also got the Nanagai, which, in my opinion, they're up there with one of the best eating fish to eat too. Nanagai burgers, we've spoke about them on the show.
Yeah.
Bloody terrific. And the sharks, the school sharks and the gummy sharks, they're coming over the side every single trip pretty much. So the guys at Real Action Fishing Charters, I personally don't know who they are, but I'm going to give them a shout out because they've done such a tremendous job working through this crap period. And I'm really hoping that the fishing keeps going for those guys because they're really working hard and catching some awesome fish.
For work, board, we've got a massive show of Real Adventures coming your way this morning. So stick around, plenty more on the other side of this break.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. Aaron, I have been addicted to the Olympics over the past week. I'm loving every bit of it. You've been mocking me with a few texts back and forth because of my love for the equestrian and the Grand Prix freestyle for those playing at home, the Grand Prix freestyle. You get to choose your own song, and I think song choice when it comes to riding a horse is critical. It needs to be sort of almost Hans Zimmer-esque. Like, if you've got something that's truly epic, people will be more engaged, and I think they'll give you a slightly better score.
Bit of Darryl Braithwaite, ride horses.
What's that American song with something about horses no name? Could be. Anyway, we're getting off track here. So many great sports. There's been a few added this year. We've seen surfing, which is terrific, skateboarding, 3-on-3 basketball, which I'm not totally, I'm not sold on. Everyone keeps telling me there's huge, massive participation rates right around the world, but that hasn't really been a driving factor when you look at some of the sports in the Olympics. Fishing is not on there, Aaron, and it should be, because we are classed as a sport. No one participates in a sport more than they do fishing. It's the most popular sport in the world. If fishing was included into the Olympics, would you have it as a catching exercise or more of a casting exercise? Because one of the great things to go and see when we went to boat shows was seeing the casting competitions. Could you see yourself as an Olympian?
We've all got strengths, Pat, and one of your strengths in your game that you play is getting out of the park, getting the ball. Well, for me, it's whiting. And I want to see an Olympic sport where it's first to your bag limit of whiting. Here in Victoria, it's 20 per person, and I want to challenge someone for the Olympics, and I want to see that line coming across the water as a whining in when you're chasing it down for that record time to get that world record.
The problem, though, you've missed a little important factor here, Aaron. The Olympics goes right around the world, and Pat, I'm not sure what the fishing is like in Tokyo this time of the year.
Each country gets to choose. I think it is up to take four in, put four sports out each year. I think it's along the lines of that. If you're in Australia and it's coming to Brisbane in whenever it is, I read it somewhere, it's coming to Brisbane. So that's Australia. If they've got to bring it down to Port Phillip Bay or Western Port, I think I've got something to work with here.
It is coming to Australia. We worked very hard as a country to get it to Australia with all the other nations that were bidding for it. We managed to get it. Actually, there was no one that was bidding for it. So it was always going to be ours. Well, maybe it's more of something that's Queensland-based. Maybe it's sort of your cold trout sort of action.
What would you have? Would you go the casting or the fishing side of it?
No, I think the
technical side or the fishing side?
No, it would have to be a casting competition because it takes too much time to get your...
Bit like archery.
Exactly right. I think it'd be sensational.
Did you see some of the stuff-ups during the week, just to name a couple? We saw a C-bomb. We saw an F-bomb. We've seen a boat blocking triathletes from getting into the water. I'll tell you what, that bloke who was driving hard reverse, did you see him swing out of that? I tell you, he's lucky he didn't take out 15 contestants.
The thing that I love most about it, after the F-bomb was dropped, it doesn't get much more Australian. But... That encapsulates Australia perfectly. And the other thing that I really enjoyed was America's disdain for Dean Boxall's celebration. It's warmed the soul during the week to see how upset that it's made them, because they get a little bit of their own medicine with how friggin' poorly they behave.
That was going to be my advice for the gaff this week for that one. One of my favourites is the BMX runs over the official. I don't know if you've seen that. He took out the potential gold medalist. He stuffed his knee in a warm-up.
We'll actually never see that official again. So,
it's that two people pretty quickly this week, the boat driver and the BMX marshal or whatever it was.
Let's get to the social club where we take your questions from social media. We've got a Real Brand giveaway every week, fishing top and hat. And we've had a few little issues with sending those out. So stay with us. They will be sent out. First question is from Owen Red. I'm about to buy some jigs for the upcoming kingfish season. What do you recommend I purchase? I fish in the bay, but I also like fishing where there's water movement. Do I go super heavy?
It's a good question, Owen. You need to have sort of every – with kingfish, you need to have everything on offer, and it comes down to your hard bodies, to your plastics, to your squid strips. But with jigs specifically, you need to match it to where you're fishing as much as possible. Now, a place like I fished Port Welsh Pool, White Rock, which is a beautiful place where we fished, you know, over the summer just gone. Now, a place like that, not a lot of tidal influence. You're not traditionally fishing in wind because you're traveling so far out, where there you'll get away with 120, 130 gram jig. But then you head to a place like the Port Phillip Bay Heads where the tide's rushing, it's up to 60 metres, you might need a 180 up to 220 at times. You've also got places in New Zealand like the Three Kings, and you're dropping down hundreds of metres and they're using up to 300 gram size jigs. So there's such a different range that you need to purchase. If I were you, I would probably – it gets quite expensive at times, but I would definitely – be trying to match your fishing area with the cost to save the cost. So if you're fishing the heads and offshore, I would buy 120 gram jigs up to 200, and I'd probably buy two of each. Be mindful that you're going to lose a couple here and there, but you shouldn't lose too many. From the fish side of things, it's more the structure. So if you've got a 180, a 160 should cover you if you do lose that 180, or the two 180s, vice versa, right up to 200s. So for me, it's about having variety for where you actually specifically are going to target kingfish. The next question is from Lockie. Danger, how big of a boat would you go for beach launching, and what factors do you take into consideration?
Well, I think I've got the ultimate beach launcher, Lockie. So I've got a 15-foot Staby craft, and the reason that I can't go any bigger where we launch is because of the just how steep the beaches are, and we launch straight into swell. You can launch a far bigger boat off the beach, and I generally stick to aluminium. If you've got areas where you've got trenches, you can launch into deeper water and you don't have incoming directional swell straight onto the beach. So I suppose you're limited by how protected you are. So the two examples that I've got, so where I launch at home, we're straight into swell. The beach gradient is not decent at all. So you've got to drive your car a fair distance into the water. Torquay, for example, which is close to Bells Beach, one of the most popular sort of surf spots around the country. It's easier there because it's quite protected. But then you look at different locations around, if you go further north, you go, say, Fraser Island, you can get different spots where you can, find those gutters, launch directly into those, and you can launch really decent-sized boats. Same thing in South Australia. You don't have that swell that you have to worry about. So you find a lot of people will launch with tractors and they'll launch 6-metre boats. So it depends on how much swell that you have to deal with and how steep the beaches are. If it's not steep, then really you're looking at a boat that's sort of not much bigger than 4.5 metres, 4.7, and then you're looking for as light or outboard as you can get. So you're keeping your overall weight down. So it depends on what you're fishing. Redmond, so I wouldn't be going too much bigger than that.
What about tow vehicles, Pat? That's pretty important. With you've spoken about the boat side of it, tow vehicles are extremely important. Some people have the options of tractors and the likes with certain fishing clubs, Pat.
Well, absolutely, and that's definitely worth it. Your $100-$200 a year or whatever it might be for signing up at your local fishing club, where you've got access to a tractor and you don't have to drive your four-wheel drive onto the beach. And over time, you will kill your car. You just will, because you're driving it so deep into the water, particularly if you're launching a bigger boat. So I would definitely suggest signing up to your local fishing club. You get access to the tractor. You don't have to worry about being bogged, because at some stage you're going to get bogged launching off the beach, no matter how good you are. It's just what happens, particularly when you're dealing with tides and you're having to, work hard against that sort of thing.
When you're sitting at the cafe because you've been asked to grab breakfast on the way down, you're actually not running late, and you get a phone call off Pat abusing you because he's tried to put the boat in early and he's got bogged and he needs it. Yeah. I'm copping abuse because the tide's coming in.
Yep.
Just accept the abuse, because it's a bit stressful at times, isn't it?
It is, exactly right. So you have to pick your times and pick your battles. Lyndon, Red, have you ever ran two hooks for whiting? If so, when and why not?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because it's something that I don't do. Now, the reasons that I don't do it is I fish a lot of tidal waters. And I'll see a couple of local Queenscliff boys have been fishing for years. They'll go out and they'll get a few double headers and whatnot. But for the hassle of putting two baits on, the amount of times you actually get double hookups, and also for the chances of your bait spinning a hell of a lot more, it's just not worth it. But it comes back to, that's more of the why not. But if so, when? Places like Clifton Springs, or an area wherever you fish around the country that doesn't have serious tidal waters, you can definitely run two hooks for whiting on an extended pattern. You probably don't even have to run extended, just run a normal pattern oster with two hooks on the actual main bit of leader in itself. And you've also got things like Swamp, just an example, Swan Bay a little while ago. I was fishing in there and it's very heavy ground, heavy terrain. And what I mean by that is, if you were to stand on the actual ground in itself, you'll come up to maybe your shins in weed. But then if you actually push down, you're going to go into the mud. So what I actually do is with the sinker, I actually bring my hook up off the bottom to get it out of that weed, so it's easier for the fish to find it. So that there is a couple of little options that you've got regarding tide. I wouldn't do it in tide, but to get out of the weed or in non-tidal areas, 100% well worth running two hooks. If you were to ask me, would I do it? Probably not, because you go through a lot more bait and I try to concentrate that whole time on that one fish. So that's what I would do. But like I said, it will definitely work. And if so, that's the answer there that I've just given you.
Owen, congratulations, mate. You're our winner this week. Send us a direct message and we'll get it sent out to you. Great question in regards to the upcoming Kingfish season and what size jigs to use. Plenty more Real Adventures coming up after the break.
Gearing up for Dometic. Always stay relaxed and hydrated wherever your adventure takes you with Dometic's rugged drinkware.
It's now time for Gearing Up for Dometic. Fuel your adventure with Dometic's outdoor drinkware. Earlier in the week, I caught up with Michael Evans from Victorian Inland Charters. Listen to what he has to say.
Good morning, Michael.
G'day, mate. Morning. How are you?
Going well, mate. Thanks for jumping on this morning. Now, Victorian Inland Charters, let's just say it's a famous name. It's been fishing around Victoria's freshwater fishery for quite a period of time now. And a very good friend of yours, Trevor Holmes, who used to hold the reins, who has more aluminium in him now than an actual Stabycraft does in itself. So you did take the reins from Trev a few years ago. Mate, take us through the business, what you do, and a little bit about what's going on at the moment.
Trev owned the business since I think it was about 2013. And about 2.5 years ago, about 4 years ago, I actually went and jumped on board with him and worked with him and all that sort of stuff. And then I started a second boat and was working under him and all that. And then he decided to hand the reins over to me a little bit. And he sort of wanted to step away from the business a bit, just from a few health issues and whatnot. So I took it on and then eventually just took it over from him. He was happy to sort of hand the business over to me and let me sort of take it over from there. And I've been doing it for 4 years now, and I've taken over Trev about 2.5 years ago. We travel around to some of the lakes and impoundments around Victoria, chase trout, redfin, chinook salmon, Murray cod, yellowbelly.
Yep.
And yeah, so that's sort of the gist of it.
So we're in the middle of, smack bang middle of winter. It's as cold as anything. It's the motivation is slightly on the down low. We all know that. Bit of rain, cold, especially on those lakes. What are you, to get people motivated, it's usually the best time of the year to catch trout and a few other species, isn't it?
Yeah, well, this time of year, that's the part where you said it's freezing cold, it's rainy, windy. But as you said, again, it's probably your prime time for your big trout and chinook salmon. They've just sort of, especially the browns, they've just come off the tail end of their spawning sort of habits and all that type of thing. Now they're starting to feed up and they're coming in around the shallows of the lakes, and it can be pretty exciting with the old bent minnows and surface lures and stuff like that. And in some of our lakes, especially down the crater lakes and all that sort of thing, there's brands in there 10, 15 pounds. So you just never know what you could get.
Speaking of crater lakes, now for those that aren't freshwater minded and such, similar to probably more myself, I do bits and pieces, but when you say crater lakes, what are crater lakes?
So the crater lakes are old extinct volcanoes down in Camperdown region, and they're really deep. They're 50, 60 metres deep. They've got water year round. They've got access. They've got big fish. They've got lots of fish. And yeah, they're great lakes.
So over the next few weeks, you've got some availability, which we'll talk about how to get in contact with you shortly. How do you set up a charter? What will you be doing? You've got redfin on offer. You've got trout on offer. There's a few other species.
Yeah. So at the minute, I'm down at Lake Parambie.
Yep.
And got a few charters going on this weekend, and then I'll be back down again next weekend at Lake Parambie. Then I'll probably have a week off and maybe head to Eildon or go back down there. Just depends how the fishing's going, but. Yeah, I mean, some guys want to come on board and they just want to get a feeder ready, so we'll go out and do that. And other guys just come on specifically want to chase a big trout or a big salmon, so, yeah, we head out and do that. And different options, trawling, bait fishing, casting, it's endless opportunities on what you can do. It's just a matter of if the fish want to play the game on the day.
What determines how you target, I guess, each species? So I did Lake Tolondo a couple of years ago with Trev for a bit of fun, and...
Yep.
He used different methods in Lake Tolondo. Now, you're in Parambie, like you said. What determines what you're going to use on the day?
Wind factor, cloud cover, barometer is a massive thing. You've got to follow barometer. Moon phases too do affect freshwater fish. I'm not a big fan of a full moon. I don't mind fishing the build up to it, but I reckon sort of a few days sort of in and around it and after it is a bit poor. Easterly winds, I hate easterly winds for the crater lakes. They just shut the fish down. They don't want to know about it.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Just all that sort of thing. And that will determine on, depending on all those things, whether I'll fish deep, whether I'll fish shallow. Early morning, late arvo, generally I'll push right into the edges because the fish come out from the depths and sort of start hunting for a cheap feed around the edges. So that's the best time to get your surface action type thing. So So
you work all year round. We're obviously in the middle of the winter. We've spoken about your trout. We've spoken about your redfin. And you've also spoken about Lake Eildon. But as the water starts to warm up, where do you tend to situate yourself? Like for me, it's going to be, I'd like to come more in the summer period. I know some people will be on the same same page as that. Just, and I know you got your hardcore fishers that want to land that trophy brown trout that you just spoke about. But pushing into the summer, what are we? What would you recommend? Where will you not recommend? Where will you be situated to, and what will you be targeting?
So over summer is obviously my real busy period. Almost can't get a break for myself, but I sort of try and still swap it up. I go to, you know, that's when I'll start going to Eildon chasing the cod and the yellows. It gets really busy up there. The demand for fishing gets really busy as well. But I'll also go back to the Crater Lakes as well and have a go down there, because you believe it or not, you do get some big trout in summer. A lot of people don't think that they do. And your redfin fishing really starts to fire up down that way as well. So you've got the redfin down at the Crater Lakes, it really booms. And then up at Lake Eildon, your cod fishing really starts to pick up, especially surface fishing and all that, as the weather gets warmer and all that sort of thing. And yellowbelly fishing is really good too. So, yeah.
What you talk about your methods that you target with what you spoke about before, your bent minnows and whatnot during the winter months of trout. How do you catch a big trout in summer? Because to tell you honest truth, I didn't really pick that you caught big trout through the summer. I always thought it was winter. How do you target them? Because they push down deep and whatnot.
Yeah. So in the summer when you go for trout at the deeper lakes, you got the options of dam rigging, using weighted clips, and getting your lures right down in front of them and all that sort of thing. Bait fishing. And well, believe it or not, my biggest fish that I've caught from those lakes is a bit over 9 pounds. And nearly 80 centimetres. And that was on a 37 degree day on the 28th of January 2 years ago in 35 metres of water at 12 o'clock during the day.
So you're down, so you're literally down rigging 30 plus metres at times to target these trout.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Because a lot of time they'll hug the bottom during the day, obviously, because it's the cooler water. So they'll be down to 30, 40, 50 metres deep. And it's just a matter of putting your lure down in front of one of them that wants to eat, I guess.
Now, ask your honest opinion with eating quality. Now, I know you've done a bit of salt water in your time and whatnot. They call the redfin the chicken of the freshwater, and whiting, they reckon, is the top of the range out of the salt water. For me, it's flathead, but some people compare whiting to be very, very similar to the redfin on the chew.
No, see, I'm opposite. I don't get me wrong, I love me whiting with flathead. They're bread and butter fish. I absolutely love eating them. But with the ready, by far, they're probably the best freshwater eating fish, and I compare them to flathead more than whiting.
Right, so everyone, yeah.
Now, white flaky meat, and I think it's got the same texture, it tastes the same, looks the same. So, yeah, I compare it to flathead more so. I tell anyone, if they've never eaten a redfin, and you eat a flathead, you'll eat redfin, no worries.
Well, that makes me want to go chase redfin. with the lakes at the moment, if someone wants to sort of book you in for somewhere in particular because they want to learn that area as a guide, do you jump on people's boats? And I know I'm just throwing that out there. Do you jump on their boats and will you take them through, say, for example, Eildon or whatnot?
Over the last couple of months, I've had sort of been this new flavours coming. A lot of people have been asking me if I would do that guiding side of things where I jump on their boat, show them how to use their gear, take them out of the lake, show them what to look for with their gear and show them how to target specific things and all that sort of stuff. So that will be a new feature sort of going forward into the summer months. I will offer that where I'll start jumping on other people's boats with them and sort of helping them use their stuff and, yeah, doing a lot of that rather than coming on my boat using all my gear and, yeah.
Save you a dollar or two and they get more out of it. It's a pretty simple way to
do it. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they get to sort of use their own gear while they're out fishing, and some people don't know a lot about sounders or techniques, rigs, all that sort of stuff. They get on their boat, show them how to do it, show them what to look for, and show them how to set it all up. So, yeah.
Pretty simple game. Mick Evans from Victorian Inland Charters. Mate, just quickly, how do we get a hold of you? Throw your number. You got Facebook, you got Instagram?
Yep, Facebook and Instagram, both Victorian Inland Charters.
Yep.
You can inbox both them pages or DM, whatever you want to call it. Online fairly regularly. I get the notifications if someone sends an inbox, so I sort of get to it pretty quick.
Yep.
And you can give me a buzz on 0402-347-515.
Perfect.
And for any inquiries, bookings, don't hesitate to get in contact with us.
Once again, Michael Evans from Victorian Inland Charters. He's taken over from Trev Holmes, and don't tell Trev, but I heard he does a better job. We'll keep that going. Thanks for joining us this morning. Real Adventures, mate, and I'll catch up with you soon.
Not a problem, mate. Thank you very much.
That was Gearing Up for Dometic Mobile Living, made easy. And now it's time for Red's Review.
Patrick, I quite often waltz into your place in the Amarok and struggle to find a park because you've got 64,000 builders usually at your house for the past 2 years. And one day, Dave the builder goes, "Ah, just park on the lawn, mate." I said, "Oh, no, nah, you'll go off." And he goes, no, he's over. He's over that phase now. And sure enough, I walked upstairs. You turned to your left out of the balcony. He goes, "Get off my lawn." I said, "Well, that's Dave's fault, not mine, because he told me you'd be over it. And you sure weren't over it." And today's review is very relevant to your lawn. So take it away.
It is, Redmond. Today we are reviewing Steel's RMA 510. It is a self-propelled battery lawnmower. Now, some of my relatives have described this as a vegan lawnmower, Redmond.
I agree.
Until they've actually used it. Now, you don't have to change oils. You don't have to fill it up with fuel. All you got to do is plug it in and away you go. And I didn't understand. I've got a decent-sized lawn, probably 700 square metres of lawn sort of front and back of the house. So it's sort of on the peripheral of, geez, could you even justify getting a ride-on? But this takes the cake because being self-propelled, and I didn't really understand what this was, but it drives itself. So all you've got to do is aim this mower and away you go. Now, there's two batteries. So there's one battery that charges or that powers the mower, and then there's another compartment for a spare battery, depending on the size of the lawn that you've got. Now, I've got, say, like I said, 600 to 700 square metres, and it does my entire lawn on one charge. It is absolutely brilliant. Now, it's 21-inch deck, so this is I don't know how much it cuts, and it is bloody sensational. Not only is it super quiet, it's good for the environment, zero emissions, but it is so functional because it doesn't take time to – it takes so much less time than my old mower because it's self-propelled. It drives itself. So you just steer it in the direction. You've got your catcher there like any other mower.
So you're lazy.
Well, it's a great lazy mower, absolutely. It's got a 36-volt battery that comes with it. And for that medium-sized lawn, I think it is absolutely brilliant. And anyone that hasn't considered a battery-powered mower the next time they're looking to upgrade, seriously go and have a look at it. Steel.com.au for more information. They are absolutely brilliant. So that is Red's review for today.
How much are they roughly?
So you're looking at about $650 plus your battery.
So all I'm pretty much hearing here is eggplant palmy versus chicken palmy.
Well, I know you don't like to spend too much time in your or in anything other than fishing. You don't have to worry about fuel for this thing. You don't have to worry about oil changes. None of that. You don't have to pull your arm out of its socket because you're trying to get the thing started because you flooded it beforehand. All you do, put your battery in, you've charged the battery, away you go.
My new mower pulls their first go every go.
And that there, Redmond, is Red's review.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. It's time for Red's tip. Now, this is an absolute ripper, Redmond. When you brought this up during the week around a little bit of sort of lockdown work that you've been doing, a little bit of organising, because let's be honest, your boat isn't always the cleanest.
Well, when I took it to Melbourne Marine Centre to get a bit of work done the other week, I wanted a couple of things changed. Poor fiberglasser. I had to do a little bit. I wanted to get my live bait tank glassed in an area, and he reckons he nearly died.
And that's not because anything's dropped out. It's more what he's found.
Yeah, it wasn't the fiberglass this time. I don't even know what he found. He didn't find anything. I reckon he was having it on. I reckon he was pulling my leg. But, it's looking after you. When you fish every day, it's harder. Like, it's all right when you fish once or twice a month or here or there or every couple of weeks. You tend to look after stuff a little bit better. But I fish every day and I get a little bit lazy at times, I'll be honest. And my old man fish bag and my Dometic Esky, Dometic boxes, they tend to smell a bit. And I'll be honest with you, I found offcuts of tuna in a Dometic that I had. I reckon it was sitting there for, I'm going to go with, I'll be generous, 2 months.
So that was mummified by the time that you found it?
Yeah. It wasn't good. And that's how good they see. I couldn't even smell. I'm like, open it. I'm like, I'll take that out on the whiting today. Opened it. Well, it ended up coming out with me. It was more just to get rid of what was in it. It got down to the bin at the ramp because physically the missus would kill me. But what I did was I got rid of it when I got home. I left the lid off. I filled it up with water, but I would lie to you if I said I put a little bit of bleach in. I put a lot of bleach into the Dometic because I do this regularly with my fish bags as well because they're hard to clean. Like you get grime up and around all up the tops and you're always hosing it out and whatnot, but you always miss a bit. So yeah. Just a little tip. If you do want to clean your anything that starts to sort of smell, your cool boxes or your bags, whatever it is, just drop a bit of bleach in with water. But the key is for me is to actually leave it open and let it aerate too. Don't just shut it with the water in it. Make sure you leave the lid because to me it seems like it cleans it a hell of a lot better. So just your bleach from the laundry or from the supermarket, wherever you want to go. I'll get in trouble because I'm always using the bleach out of the laundry and the missus can never find it because it's sitting out the front in my shed. But it's something that works really, really well, and it does get rid of that extra grime and smell if you do make a couple of accidents like I do. And you know what? Do you know what smells the worst part about all fish? All species of fish?
Go on.
Calamari, squid. It is by far the worst.
It does when you leave it for 2 months.
Yes. No, it's by far the strongest smell. Even 3 or 4 days in the fridge, it starts to get that real strong smell. Like it's something that is potent. Calamari, squid, whatever it is, whatever you want to call it, is literally the worst smelling. So don't go leaving that in your live bait tank like I did for the poor old fiberglass.
That is Red's tip. Now it's time for the flying gaff. And off the back of the Olympics, which we are all loving and enjoying, and it's been great to see that nothing unites our country, I think, more than the Olympics. We can have our arguments and discrepancies and tit for tat around whether it be AFL, netball, all our localised sport. But as soon as the Olympics come, we claim absolutely everyone. And it's sensational to see uniting against bloody America. We love beating them. I've found if there is no Australian left in any event and New Zealand are in, all of a sudden I'm claiming that I'm now a New Zealander and I'm barracking for them as hard as possible. Yep, all of a sudden it's all about New Zealand. But the gaffe this week, Redmond, and you mentioned it off the top of the show, but there was absolute chaos at the start of the men's triathlon at the Olympics because there was a vessel at the start of the race that was literally blocking half of the starting line. So the gun goes and half the field jump in and the other half are looking at it. I think it looks like a bit of a – it looks like a naiad, sort of a – it'd be close to 30-foot, couple of big stonking outboards on the back, and he's just setting up right in the middle of the race and everyone's looking at him going, "Mate, what are you doing?" So to Chieftain that's been driving the Naiad, it's not about you. Hop out of the way and let the boys do their thing because it was one of the more comical things. And we have seen a few mishaps throughout the Olympics, Redmond. We always do. But that was the one of the more humorous ones that we've seen during the week.
I just don't know what he was doing there. And it hasn't actually come out what he was doing there. Like, why were you parked like you're mooring at the fish and chip shop at Queenscliff? what are you doing?
It's for broadcast, mate. He was getting in nice and close to get a really good look at the competition.
He was so close to killing people. Like, and then all of a sudden the panic comes in and just hard reverse, the boat's pretty much sinking backwards and there's swimmers either side of the boat and the actual other half
props in the water.
Yeah, other half of the swimmers are actually further than where the back of the boat is out swimming. Like, yeah, that could have been an absolute disaster.
Thanks for your company this morning. We hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you next week.